When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Consecutive FA Cup finals for Erik ten Hag's Manchester United, but it all feels, well, weird, frustrating, underwhelming, infuriating, even definitely strange. Manchester United beat Coventry City on penalties after another extraordinary cup match for these two sides, who had defeated Liverpool 4-3 and Wolves 3-2 respectively in two of the great quarterfinals of the competition before this Wembley meeting. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast with me, Harry Robinson, and Jack Tate back alongside me. We're going to review Sunday's dramatic match, of course. We'll talk about Erik ten Hag's future with the United owners watching over this extraordinary game. We'll discuss the upcoming Under-18 Premier League Cup final after last week's interview with Nick Cox. We'll look ahead to home games against Sheffield United and Burnley, as United look to grasp something from this league season, plus draws against Tottenham Hotspur for both United women and the men's under-21s, and guess the player. So let's begin. Jack, initial reactions to a bit of a mind-boggling FA Cup semi-final, and certainly the weirdest feeling after qualifying for final that I've ever had, and I think I probably ever will have as a United fan.
Well, our last game in the FA Cup was one of United's best ever wins, you would say, and I think you mentioned it was probably the best Old Trafford win that you've ever experienced in the stadium. I bet this probably goes down as one of the least satisfying, I would suggest, maybe in your match-going experience, being at Wembley and not feeling that elated at the end of the game.
Embarrassed.
I happened to be on a flight throughout the entirety of the game, and I prepared myself before I left that I wasn't going to open my phone and see that we'd won 5-0. I knew it was... This United team doesn't do easy wins, but I think the manner in which we went about that game, not only the score, but the fact that we were 3-0 up with 20 minutes to go, it's embarrassing what we ended up needing to pull out to get through that game.
Yeah, and yet again, I mean, first of all, relied on the length of a player's toenail to save us, effectively. The length of a player's big toenail is a bit unfair. To save us in a very tight offside decision. It's a correct decision, and it's what VAR is there for, but we had our slice of luck. Coventry had their slice of luck with handball penalties are generally a fairly lucky thing to receive, and of course the massively deflected second goal as well, but we had our share of luck in not losing that. But United again under ten Hag showed an unprecedented capability for capitulation, and I mean, I can't count the number of times this season, and it is it's baffling, but it's also not surprising. It gets more ridiculous every time it happens, it feels, but it's not surprising because it has been a trend throughout the season. And initially this year, predominantly showed itself in the UEFA Champions League, where we'd established good leads over Galatasaray at home and Copenhagen away, only to lose or draw the games. We would actually play quite well away at Bayern Munich and then concede and score. And that has since transferred to all competitions, and the chaos has only grown since the turn of the year. There have been good performances peppered within that throughout the season, but not many and very rarely for 90 minutes. And this was a good performance for 65 minutes. But as it went to 3-1, incredible that people didn't think, oh, that's just a consolation goal. But I think a lot of United fans, me included, thought, oh, here we go again. And if I'm thinking that, then I know for a fact the players are thinking that. And it's a vicious cycle, which requires strong mentalities, resilience, good management. And at the moment, it feels like all three of those things are missing.
I can't remember any United team in recent memory letting leads slip away, conceding late goals to the extent that this team has done over the last couple of months. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. As of a few weeks ago, it was something like 7 goals past 90 minutes that we conceded in our last 6 matches. I'm sure that record hasn't got any better since then. I mean, It's a as you said, the Champions League was where these kind of performances were seen earlier on in the season. The league form was still bad, but it was bad in a very different way than the Champions League. And it seems in the new year, Ten Hag has sort of, we were really struggling for goals, obviously, especially before Hoyland started scoring, relying so heavily on McTominay for his goal contributions. And since then, scoring suddenly hasn't become an issue. But it seems like for us to enable this team to unlock its potential going forward, we have become just absolutely catastrophically bad in defence. And this isn't, it's not like teams, at times we are under the cosh, say like against Man City, at times against Liverpool. But it's not that all the time. It's just that this team cannot seem to allow itself to move forward without creating just huge, huge open spaces all across the pitch. And it's not individual players. You could pick out individual players for certain goals, like Wan-Bissaka at times yesterday. But it's all across the pitch every single time. And that, at some point, that can't be on the players themselves.
Absolutely, yeah.
Every time. As a one-off, maybe, you know, two or three times over the course of a season, absolutely players can make mistakes. But this is very clearly either Ten Hag is telling the players to do this, or if they are doing it to some degree of their own volition, he doesn't have the wherewithal to instruct them to do something different.
Yeah, there's a balance. You're right, the scoring is working now. And United certainly haven't failed to score since the turn of the year, scored in every game. I think probably averaging just over two goals per game, which is a good record. It might be as much as 2.5. We scored 4 a couple of times, 3 a couple of times, 3 quite a few times, but we've lost one of the times we scored 3 goals away at Chelsea. I think there's a balance with what you're saying in that clearly this is a managerial choice to a certain extent, and we've discussed that before. This is how Ten Hag wants to play. He wants to be the best transition team in the world, and it's not working at the moment. But you do look at the first 70 minutes, really, and you see a performance is far from perfect and it's not polished, but it was successful. It wasn't necessarily that entertaining, but it was successful. That's what you do in an FA Cup semi-final. And United had established a 3-goal lead and probably deserved it. 3 goals was probably about right. I don't think any more would have been fair to Coventry, but United did what they need to do. You could have said 2 as well. But it feels to me like, I'll tell you what it is, the players then lack the discipline to carry that game plan into the final 20 minutes. So the 3-goal lead's established, they think they've won the game, and suddenly you see the style of the attacks become more reckless and more individual. So you've got players trying to prove a point by scoring. You've got a more reckless, less disciplined form of defence and tracking back. And the problem with Ten Hag's game plan and United's current style of play is that it's a very fragile one. And so if it's not done to perfection, it's such a risky way in which to play that it can generate results like the one that just happened with a bit of ill luck. As we saw, for example, at Chelsea, that required some bad luck. It was a deflected goal and a penalty where a player literally just fell over and slipped, and that's bad luck. Here it required a deflected goal and another penalty, but it, with a bit of poor luck, happened. So I think it's that balance of the players lack the discipline to do this for 90 minutes. And this is something we've seen, whether it's fitness or discipline, under Ralf Rangnick, for example, under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and under other managers. But in a less risky, less fragile system and style of play, that perhaps wouldn't create such catastrophic 90-minute periods as we've seen under Ten Hag.
Well, I think you can... Look, we all get frustrated by late goals, especially when it feels like there's a pattern to them, as there was at times under Solskjaer, for sure. I was very critical of the way that we managed games under Solskjaer at times. But you also accept that late goals specifically...
We used to just sit back, didn't we?
He would just sit back. But you also accept to some degree that in football that late goals do happen. They are very frustrating when they happen, but you might go through periods where you do concede a few in quick succession and it feels like the world is falling. As it happens, though, in most of those occasions, there might be a few things like that specific game situation that forces the manager to think they have to be so defensive, which is the trap that Solskjaer would fall into. Sometimes it can be a string of some bad luck. I think the big thing here, though, is that these late goals, yes, they are all obviously coming in bunches at the end of the game, but it's not as if that's the only time we look fragile and like we're conceding. It is going on for 90 minutes right the way through every single game. Even our better performances, you can pick out any of our, sort of, let's say, five or six best performances of the year. The team that we're playing against is having brilliant opportunities right the way throughout the game, and at any point could be scoring those goals that they're since at the moment getting right at the end. There is only so much time, so many times that you can sort of ride your luck and allow teams to have glaring opportunities. And to me, look, I think this has clearly been a season where there's been struggles for the entire club with the injuries we've had that have made it difficult. Ten Hag has had to adjust on the fly, which isn't easy. I would have some sympathy if we saw, okay, first half of the season, we were clearly struggling in front of goal. Ten Hag makes some adjustments to get us scoring, and it creates these chaos games, which is what happened. If he then looked at that and thought, okay, clearly this isn't working, we've got to do something to try to change it, I would be sort of okay with that, because you could see that he's trying to sort of figure things out as he goes, deal with the injuries that he has, and sort of figure out a way that's going to work with this team. But allowing this to go on as long as it has, I mean, it's been, what, 4 months, 3 months at this point of every single game being... I mean, every single time you look up a highlights package of a United game, it's chaos at Old Trafford or chaos at whatever away stand, away ground.
And it's about 10 minutes long because so much happens in the game.
Like that, I just, that to me, I can accept this team going down this path in trying to find a solution to the problem we had in the first half of the season. I can't accept Ten Hag leaving it as it has been for so long at this point.
Yeah.
Here's a quick trivia question for you, Harry, a two-parter. How many games this year have United been, this season, have United been involved in where A, both teams have scored three or more times,
ooh,
and B, where both teams have scored two or more
I'm
times?
I'm not going to get the 2-1 because I think there's too many, but the three I feel like I can rattle off. Bayern Munich, Galatasaray at home, we didn't score three. So Bayern Munich, Copenhagen away, Galatasaray away,
yep,
that's three. Wolves away, Liverpool yep, at home, Coventry at Wembley, Chelsea away. I've got seven there.
Yeah, that's it. That's the seven.
Come on.
So seven times.
And two, if that's the case, then I'm going 15.
Very close. It's 14.
Oh, well, I'm pretty pleased with that. I've got
14 times we've been involved in games where both teams have scored two or more goals. I mean, it's ludicrous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm going to give you another trivia question and we'll come back to Ten Hag after the first guest supplier clue as well. This is a little trivia stopover. When was the last time United gave away a three-goal lead? We were trying to work these out when we were in the pub outside Wembley yesterday, and we actually didn't remember the one that the answer is. The one that someone suggested was Anfield. United were 3-0 up, wearing a black kit. I can't remember what year. And Giggs Chips jersey Dudek.
When you say giveaway, when you say throw away, do you mean we lose the game or we just don't win it?
No, you don't have to lose the game.
Well, the Everton 4-4.
I don't think we were leading by three goals, were we?
Was it only 4-2 at the most? Were we never 4-1 up?
But possibly, because the most recent one is after that.
Okay. We were never three goals up in the Leicester 5-3, were we? That was 3-1 at the most, wasn't it? The only thing I think is it something during like COVID times when everything seemed to have just mushed together?
No. For the Everton 4-4, it went 1-0 Everton, then 3-1 United, 3-2, 4-2, and then 4-4.
Ah, okay.
The answer is Sir Alex's last game against West Brom, where Lukaku scores a hat-trick for them. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, were we 5-2 up in that?
I think so. I think 5-2. And it was all wrapping up and I can't remember, but yeah, it was all wrapping up to be a perfect farewell. And in the end, it was the perfect farewell. 5-5, brilliant. But yeah, so while we're on the trivia, I'll give you first guess to play a clue and then we're going to talk about Erik ten Hag and his future. So clue one out of three. Quicker you get it, the more points you get. Your first clue is, I scored the winning penalty for Manchester United in a domestic cup semi-final at Wembley. I scored the winning penalty for Manchester United in a domestic cup semi-final at Wembley.
Rasmus Højlund.
Well, of course, Rasmus Højlund has. Is this a double bluff?
Okay.
or just a bluff? That is for you to work out.
I mean, yeah, I'm definitely not going to guess, but there's a couple of names coming to mind, but I'm sure there's plenty of others that I'm not thinking of straight away.
Let's talk to now, because Sir Jim Ratcliffe, fresh off the back of a London marathon run, which is, I'm not sure, impressive or ridiculous. Either way, I'm not that interested. Was watching it at Wembley, as were Avram and Joel Glazer, unfortunately, and many other high-up people at Manchester United, including Jason Wilcox, the newly appointed technical director, who we've not spoken about. That's good that there's more movement on that, adding to Omar Berardo as CEO. Dan Ashworth still not brought in as sporting director, or whatever exact role that would be. United still in negotiations with Newcastle about that. So Jim Ratcliffe spoke about his frustration at the length of those negotiations and the fact that high-up people in football have to be on gardening leave for 6 months or 12 months or 18 months even sometimes, which I suppose is very different to his other businesses. I'm sure it's not the first difference he will notice in football to the general business world, and I think that'll be a very hard adjustment for him and his Ineos pals. Hopefully they make it quickly for the good of United, but they were watching on. Things started very well. United were 3-0 up. I think Ratcliffe said he wouldn't be arriving at the game until half time. So by the time he got there, United were 2-0 up. Bruno made it 3. And things seemed to be going well. And yeah, obviously capitulated. Where do you stand on Ten Hag's future now?
I think it's very, very difficult to create a reasonable argument for him to stay at this point. I really do.
Well, I'm going to make it then.
All right, let's hear it.
I'm a sucker for stability and structure. And given the change expected at United coming this summer, I think there's something to be said for stability, first of all. I think Ten Hag's done a good job with United's young players. And there's a very, very talented group of young players coming through who's already established relationships with, in Harry Amass at left back. Ethan Wheatley was on the bench again on Sunday. Louis Jackson was on the bench for the first time. Habib Gunyar was there again. Shay Lacey has been in training a lot. Amir Brigamov has been in training a lot. Lots of these players. And obviously he's handled Kobbie Mainoo's rise into the first team very well and was clearly willing to put him straight in from pre-season. And it was only an injury, and perhaps this season would look very, very different if Kobbie Mainoo had been fit for the start of the season. So there's another argument. I also think these players... Look, we've said just now, and I've said that much of this is, and perhaps the majority of this is Ten Hag's fault and poor management. The antidote to that is he had a first season that was impressive and began to change the culture of the dressing room and the club and good performances and a trophy, and he still might win us a trophy this season, and hopefully he does. So that gives him a bit more room to manoeuvre in, even though this season has been really, really bad. And yeah, you're right. It is hard to make the argument, but I think it's worth having that argument made. And these players who have again shown, not all of them, some of them have shown the weak mentality that has given us problems in the past. Ten Hag knows his squad and can assess it. And in his first 2 years, he's been able to get rid of some players who needed to go, but his signings have been very much mixed because he was working in a completely dysfunctional structure that wasn't good enough. That's now going to change this summer, and hopefully that structure will be there. So hopefully you won't get the mistake of Antony, for example. But he has the ability to assess who should stay and who should go and what change is really needed. And then finally, you've got the lack of suitable successes. And I genuinely think if Ten Hag was away from Manchester United right now, he would be one of the top choices to become Manchester United manager. So it makes you think, given that the probable replacement would, I think the favourite would probably be Graham Potter, then you're looking at Roberto De Zerbi, who's had some unconvincing moments and is very stubborn in his style of play. I really like him, but who knows, might not work for United. So you've got all of that joining together, and there's a part of me as well that thinks maybe you give Ten Hag the really difficult first few months of the new United era under this structure, where he gets rid of the players who need to go and suffers from the consequences of performances, and maybe he'll make it work, and that would be fantastic. If he doesn't, then you can look for another manager after that. So I don't know. There's a plethora of reasons, but Do you think any of them are not valid? I assume you think some of them are valid, but do you think any of them are strong enough to override the poor management, particularly poor in-game management this season?
Well, I think a lot of the things you said are very valid, and the things that we've given Ten Hag a lot of credit for, even this year, and obviously especially last year when things were going a lot better. The thing for me, and this isn't to say that getting rid of Ten Hag necessarily solves any of this, it's just of all the things you mentioned there, like you bang on it, great relationship with the youth team, promoted a lot of young players into the first team, especially Kobbie Mainoo, obviously been sort of the shining light of that, but Garnacho's emergence as, you know, not just a rotation player, but a starting player now coming through the academy. It's all great. The tricky thing is understanding how much of that is because of Ten Hag specifically. Like,
yeah,
young players have come through at United under managers, every single manager since Sir Alex.
Yep, fair enough.
Yeah, Ten Hag has probably, you know, spoken a little bit more specifically about it and maybe had a closer connection. You obviously being inside the club could probably speak to that better than I can, but I've got to think, you know, Garnacho was coming through already. Kobbie Mainoo was known about as a great talent for quite a while. And you've got to think that any decent manager would probably have recognised the talent that he has created.
Yeah, but
even when
not,
he's had those great talents.
So it's not just those two, it's also the trust. I always go back to the Boxing Day game against Aston Villa, where he trusted in the final few minutes after that amazing comeback, United had to hold on to that lead. And on the pitch were Mari Forson. Was Dan Gore on there before he went on loan? He might have been Willy Kambuala.
I'd come back though and say, would those players have even been in the squad without the injury crisis?
No, but that young players very rarely get opportunities without injuries.
Well, no, of course, but that's sort of what I'm saying is, like, is that down to Ten Hag or circumstance?
Yeah, but he still trusted them. I think to your point about how, what I would think from having seen it from following the academy more closely, I think his influence has probably waned as the stresses of the first team management have grown and grown.
Yeah, which is
understandable. I think he placed real emphasis on it when he first arrived, and there was a lot more collaboration, it seems, and that's probably got lesser. But I think that's, for me, that's kind of an argument in favour of him staying, even because in a proper structure, he would be able to involve himself at the right time. But that would be more the job of a sporting director or technical director. Jason Wilcox's expertise is in that. And so, yeah, he was having to do so many jobs at once. And Nick Cox on the podcast last week was saying that when Ten Hag came in to congratulate the under-18s, after they won the title, he was talking about the specifics of the game with the lead coach, Adam Lawrence, and Nick. And he does really care and puts his input in. And he loves it. More young players train with the first team now than I think under most other managers. And that definitely is true. And that, I don't think that's just an injuries thing. I think he likes having them there and exposed to it and being able to judge them. So there's that would be my extra points.
Again, all very valid. I'm not convinced that Ten Hag himself is making that much of a difference in terms of the pipeline that we have from the academy into the first team. I think he's probably making a little bit of difference, but that's not to say that a new manager couldn't. And I think the biggest part of it, like everything that you mentioned there are good things, but to me are completely secondary to, can this manager set up our team to win?
But you know the answer to that is yes.
I don't know if that is the case. He did it last season, but
yeah.
I think you've got to say that we were also very, very patchy for a lot of last season. Like if you're telling me that last season is the blueprint, we spent all of last season saying this is just a 1 year thing. He's playing really pragmatically, just sort of dragging us through these games. We've then come into this year, and even when on the few occasions when he has had most of the squad fit, we've looked completely unimpressive, had very few ideas about how we were going to play. I haven't seen anything this season that makes me think that he could take the good of what came last year and turn it into something more sustainable over the long term. I hope if he does stay that he does, because I actually really like Ten Hag, and what he did last season shouldn't be forgotten. But if I'm a new owner coming in and looking at this Man United team, Ten Hag has given me very, very few reasons to keep him.
I think that's fair enough. My gut instinct remains he's someone who could be a successful United manager. And I think I always come back to the points that we were making in autumn, where I was really, I just felt that he hadn't received, it felt to me like he was chasing results already in October, having won a trophy and got us to finish third in his first season, and everyone agreed a really good foundational season. And it felt to me like even within probably 10 games of the new, of his second year, he was chasing results. And that to me spoke to the lack of the higher powers at United should have given him more backing, not from a financial point of view, although there could have been more on that as well. He, as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer before, and as Jose Mourinho before that, he asked for players and it seems he didn't get them. And when he did get them, they were very overpriced because of poor negotiations and strategy. But I mean backing in terms of, we want you to manage this team in the way you think it will work long term. You don't need to chase results this season. We trust you. And ultimately, if 8 months down the line they turn around and sack him, that's football. But they could have said it at the time. And perhaps they did. And perhaps I'm being too kind of Ten Hag, but if it never felt to me, the way he spoke and the way he, his team has played, never spoke to me that that was the case. And he's let himself be swallowed up by the chaos. So maybe he's not suitable long term. Both arguments are valid, and I think I'm in probably I'm very much in the minority now. But
well, and look, I think there is a lot to be said that Ten Hag has had to do this job so far in a famously chaotic environment that
two hands tied behind his back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I have a lot of time for the argument that he deserves a go at this when things are taken off his plate and there are more qualified people making decisions about things that a manager shouldn't be doing on their own.
Yeah.
That being said, that part of it is only true if we're confident that in that better structure, in theory at least, Ten Hag should have better players, better recruitment, a still very, very strong youth system, much more structure around him to really focus on getting the best out of whatever group of players he has come the end of the transfer window in the summer. Do we think he is a manager that can get the most out of that group of players? Ultimately, to me, that's what the decision has to come down to, because in this better structure, again, all of that other stuff should be taken off of his plate. Not say he's never going to be involved in any discussion on transfers and obviously still be involved with the youth team, but you would hope that that stuff would take care of itself more than it has done previously. Again, I'm not saying that Ten Hag isn't that man, because we've seen it at Ajax. He has done it at Ajax.
But we know this is a man who created two or three distinct Ajax teams with different styles of play, all equally successful.
Yeah, and his success at Ajax is brilliant. That's what got him the job at United. But there has to be also a decision about how much faith do we have in him to do that here at United. And that's where I think Ten Hag is.
But if you're asking purely from a culture perspective, does he have the quality? I think the answer is yes. Does he have the communication skills to make it happen? In England, it's really hard to know from the outside.
I do think
I think there's lots of things that there's so much of this decision is behind this. You have to be by the seat. Thankfully, the people who are making it will have that that luxury, because things like the injuries, for example, if it's accepted within the club that it's Ten Hag's fault, then injuries aren't an excuse to state the office. If it's accepted that maybe there's another issue, whether it's facilities, the wider staff, and then it's not Ten Hag's fault, we very rarely accept this in football, or it's just really bad luck, is unlikely, but you never know. If it's accepted that the injury situation is not Ten Hag's fault, and it's not a result of his training or anything like that, or mismanagement of returns or whatever, if it's not his fault, then it does become quite a valid excuse for this terrible season. And you're right, when there's been a full strength team, we still have looked really poor. And we should be playing better, given we have a nearly full strength team now, with the exception of basically Shaw and Martinez. So, yeah, but I think that's one of the key things. because I thought, what is it? It's like 34 different starting defence back fours this season from about 45 games. It's ludicrous.
Yeah, and that is the kind of thing that you have to take into consideration, of course. I think the hard part is, and this is where I think Ten Hag has to some degree shot himself in the foot this year with, as you said before, chasing results. And I understood, and I still understand why he went down that route, because Man United is a pressure cooker, even after you coming off the back of a good season. But I don't think he's given himself much of a chance to actually showcase, this is what my vision is for this Man United team. We're 2 years in, and I don't feel like I'm any closer really to knowing what he thinks this team could be long term than I did when he first came in.
Yeah, and that'd be my main fault with him. Yeah. And especially even in press conferences this season, his failure to really emphasise and outline his vision compared to how the way he did it in his first season. First season, he was constantly talking about culture and work ethic. And obviously, those are easier things to talk about than style of play, particularly in your second language. But this season, the failure to do that has been a part of the thing that I think has helped fans to sway in their decision.
I don't feel like he's given fans anything to become invested in other than the results.
Very true. Yeah.
And so then when the results don't go your way.
Dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think to the point about what happens next season, I think if Ten Hag does stay, which
first of all, he needs to go on holiday.
Well, yeah, he needs a break. But also I think you have to give him quite a bit of runway next season. Like, he can't feel under pressure after a couple of bad results at the start of the season, because then it's just going to be a repeat of everything that we've had now. He needs to be given and sort of empowered by Jim Ratcliffe and this new structure that's going to be put in place at United to say, look, you've got, within reason, we're giving you the season. Show us what you want this team to be.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Anything else?
But I also do think that probably the point from the initial stuff that you said, probably the point I think I take most strongly is there aren't that many good options out there. And that is a big consideration. Like, all these rumours about Tuchel recently, I find Tuchel's football really, really uninspiring.
Yeah, although I'm hesitant to use that as my main argument, because I don't think that should ever really be the argument to keep someone, but it is, yeah. It is worth thinking about. I always think you should have to make the positive argument for someone to stay, which we've tried to do here, rather than the negative argument for them to stay, as in there's no good options. But yeah, of course, it has to come into mind, and that's why I mentioned it.
I mean, what about Kieran McKenna?
It was some risk. But that's one of the things, if given the apparent incredible knowledge and contacts of the people coming to work at United now, say Jason Wilcox or Omar Berada or Dan Ashworth from his back garden, you would hope that it would go beyond just the obvious names of Ruben Amorim or Tuchel or Zidane, and that there might be even for kind of the next Graham Potter. And I still really rate Graham Potter as a manager, and as I'd always say, it's pretty mad to judge a manager based off Chelsea or PSG, sometimes even Real Madrid, because, or just environments, doesn't have to be specific clubs, but environments where you just thought that's never going to work. And Graham Potter at Chelsea, given the mad, mad, mad ownership there and strategy, it's hard to judge them off that, but it will cloud people's opinions, and it will need clever introduction of him as United manager to get the fans inspired, I think. Yeah, but yeah, it will be very interesting. We're going to have guests to play Clue 2. A reminder of Clue 1 was I scored the winning penalty for Manchester United in a domestic cup semi-final. And Clue 2 is I'm from Scandinavia and I made my senior debut in football aged only 15. Oh. So I'm Scandinavian and I made my senior debut in football aged only 15.
Well,
any guesses?
Well, yeah, still the same two players that came to mind immediately, which I'm sure you've done on purpose, Hoyland and Lindelof.
Yeah.
I'm leaning Lindelof because when we signed Hoyland, I'm sure, I looked a lot into his past, and I'm pretty sure he was older than that when he made his debut, because everything's happened for him.
Are you gonna guess?
So I'm just trying to sort of run it back, because everything's happened for Hoyland so quickly. He didn't play for his sort of academy team for very long before he then moved out of Denmark. I'm going to guess Lindelof.
I'll tell you if you're right after clue three.
Leaving me on the edge of my seat.
That's the nature of the game. Under-18s cup final. Premier League Cup final against Manchester City on Tuesday evening, 7:30 kickoff at Leeds Sports Village. It'll be on MUTV if you want to watch it and live elsewhere. If you want to go, free tickets. So come along, support these lads because they're really, really talented. We spoke a bit, me and Nick Cox spoke a bit about this last week and yeah, they're a great team. They've just won the title at an absolute canter. They beat City at home early this season. They lost away from home. It's two brilliant youth teams. It will be one of the best youth football games, hopefully, if the two teams both play up rather than cowering under pressure, then it will be one of the best youth football games in the world this year at club level. So it should be really exciting. It's not the FA Youth Cup. It's not at Old Trafford because the first team game against Sheffield United was moved date, which is a shame, but it is a little similar to the Ralph Rennick season. This season, given the FA Cup final, hasn't petered out quite to the same extent, but it is nice to have, again, 2 years on when the first team hasn't been purring quite as much, particularly as it was last season, to have that injection of vitality from youth and the injection of excitement from youth, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always great to see the youth team's doing well and the under 18, I mean, the run that they've been on for most of the season has been just out of this world. It's definitely been the best performance that we've seen from an under 18s group in the last, well, since we've been doing this podcast, definitely. And you'd probably know better than me about if there's any teams historically that can sort of match up to the consistency that they've produced in the results and with a real rotating squad as well, because so many players as youth players have been called up to the first team, under 18s players have been called into the under 21s. And so at times you've had under 16s, under 15s players playing in the 18 squad and still producing these great results. It's a real testament not only to the top end talent in the academy, but also the strength and depth that we've got going down to the age group.
Absolutely. And it's a reward for several years of great quality work in the academy. And just a really exciting team, a good group of lads and, good luck to them. I'm really excited.
I haven't read it yet, but I saw this morning that Andy Mitten has just done a big feature in The Athletic about United's academy, focusing on the recruitment part of it, which I'm excited to dig into.
It's very interesting. Yeah, he went behind the scenes for a day, and there will be a new project on that coming up soon, which I can't say more about yet, but soon.
You really are leaving us all on the edge of our seats now.
I've been waiting for it to come out for a while, but it'll almost be there. And yeah, it's great. And the under 18s is the first of two finals. They'll play probably Chelsea in the national final of the under 18 Premier League. United won the northern section. Chelsea haven't quite won the southern section yet, or they might have done this weekend, but they basically will. They've got games in hand and at a top. And that game, I think, will be played down south. I think it rotates every year, and this year it will be played down south in the middle of May. So two just really great kind of development opportunities. I think a crowd of a good 8,000-9,000 are expected at Lyon Tuesday night. Hopefully the weather's good, which means people don't stay at home. And yeah, it'll be a great experience for these lads. The lineup will be really interesting as well. It will be a really good sign of who the academy really rate this season. And at the moment, who they feel have kicked on the most and basically what the best 11 is, that'll be slightly affected by first team involvement in training and in the match against Sheffield United, potentially, as well as those who travelled on Sunday to Wembley. And to be honest, that might affect United's chances if, for example, Harry Amass at left back, the starting left back all season, can't play, or Habib Gunya can't play at right back, or Louis Jackson can't play at centre back. It might affect United's chances in this game, but ultimately that doesn't matter because it will mean they're getting exposure to first team football. So that's the ultimate goal. But hopefully the under 18s can put their strongest team out and get a real challenge against City and the best team will win on the night. In terms of other academy, use the 21s because so many players were called up, so many injuries in the first team, so many of the 21s players were called up to first team training on Saturday, which meant it was an incredibly young, an average age of 18, I think, playing for the under-21s against Tottenham, who are leaders of Premier League 2. So it's expected to be a tough afternoon for United's under-21s, but they valiantly led 2-1 at one point and ended up drawing 2-2, a good equalising goal a minute after Spurs' opener from Ruben Kerley from long range, and then a tap-in from Gabriel Biancheri, his first goal at this level after great work by Ethan Williams. So good result for them, and wasn't the only 2-2 draw against Tottenham of the weekend. United Women drew 2-2 against Tottenham in the Women's Super League, a warm-up for the FA Cup final, which will be played between the same two teams. Both teams haven't won the FA Cup before, so as we mentioned last week with our guest Damian Ruskar, that'll be really exciting as well, and United go in as favourites for that one. Let's have a quick break, and for our patrons, we'll have a patron Q&A, and then we'll be previewing Sheffield United on Wednesday. Coming out of a Patreon Q&A with a really interesting chat on England and our thoughts on supporting England and United, or United and England, depending on which way you rank it. I think probably United and England. And also just on the Euros this summer. And yeah, good chat. Thanks to Ethan for the question. Thanks to all our patrons for support. If you want to become a patron, you can go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod for more information about how to do that from a couple of quid a month to help support the show in a massive, massive way. And also you get bonus Q&As and ad-free episodes, and you get early access to all our episodes as well. So go sign up if you're interested in that. Sheffield United on Wednesday, Jack. Well, what's there to say about this game? It's the worst Premier League team, well, this season, but also one of the worst we've ever seen. United should smack them in normal times. I fear. Do you think they'll be out to prove a point? I'm sure they will be out to prove a point, but do you think this team has the mentality required to use the kind of embarrassment of Sunday to prove a point, or do you think it will knock their confidence further?
It's a great question. This team seems to oscillate between doing one or the other.
I think it will knock their confidence further when we face another setback. For example, say if we're 2-0 up and we concede one, I think we could very easily see the same thing. But I think they'll probably put in a decent performance on Wednesday and win. But I don't think that will make up for it in terms of, like, I don't think that will help create that resilience going forward. But I think they'll show a short term a bit of.
It wouldn't surprise me if between the next two games, Sheffield United and Burnley, there's one fairly good performance and one shocker, which feels about on par for what this team should expect. I think the slightly worrying thing is that despite their, you know, hideous defensive record, Sheffield United have started to find the back of the net themselves over the last month or so. Their last five or six games, 2-2, 3-3, 3-1, 2-2. Then they lost 2-0. That's the only game they failed to score. And they obviously got beat 4-1 by Burnley at the weekend. There is a chance this is another 3-2, 3-3 sort of game, despite the fact we're playing one of the worst Premier League teams we've ever seen.
Well, that's nice and optimistic. Yeah. No,
we could still win 3-2.
Yeah, and given it's a Wednesday night game against Sheffield United, which a lot of people will be, and I'm always aware of the privilege when I say this, because lots of people would die to, well, not die, but would pay a lot of money to be able to come to these games and would love them. But it's the kind of game where people will be trudging rather than striding towards Old Trafford for it, because it's Sheffield United, because it's a Wednesday evening.
Probably a good chance it's the lowest Premier League attendance of the season, I would guess, at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I'd say so. There's always one game like this towards the end of the season. I think generally when it's a rearranged game at late notice in midweek against a lesser opposition. So, and this is the one. I'm sure there'll be a few empty seats, which is testament to how disappointed lots of people are in this United side and uninspired by them. A good United team would never have that. I think it will be an exciting victory like that would be a nice antidote to that. So you never know. Guess the player. I never gave you clue three. Clue one, to remind you, is I scored the winning penalty for United in a domestic cup semi-final. Clue two, I'm from Scandinavia and made my senior debut in football age 15. And clue three is I've scored one winning goal at Old Trafford this season. Jack, your guess was?
Victor Lindelof.
Do you still believe in it after clue three?
I'm trying to sort of rack my brains, actually. I think so. Didn't he score against Was it Luton he scored against?
Spot on. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Scored against Luton. He scored the winning penalty against Brighton and Hove Albion at Wembley last season in the FA Cup semi-final. And yeah, he made his debut in senior football age 15 in Sweden, which is pretty amazing. Yeah.
I've got to say, when you first said that last clue, I was worried then. It took me a minute to think about. We've had so many dramatic winning goals this year that it's sort of hard to keep track of them. And his wasn't at that. It was like much earlier in the game, wasn't it? It wasn't like last 10 minutes or anything.
Yeah, I think most of the defenders have scored, actually. We had Maguire on Sunday and a couple of others. Varane scored against Wolves in the first game of the season, didn't he? It seems a lifetime ago.
Dallo's popped up with a few goals.
Wan-Bissaka is not. Shaw is not. Well, I mean, Shaw's barely played. Okay, that's all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening, everyone, to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. For more from Jack throughout the week, you can find him on Twitter
at UTDTate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me at HarryRobinson64 on the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review. It helps. Or share it on Twitter. That's also great. Otherwise, have a fantastic week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. Podcast Network.